If you spend any time in a grocery store or on the internet, you've probably seen product taglines like made by real people, or locally produced, or only natural ingredients, or heard an ad like this.
At Whole Foods Market, we believe in food that's naturally beautiful and fresh, delicious and powerful, and full of nutrients. Food that makes us nourished and mighty, and connects us to the natural world. So there are no artificial colors, no artificial flavors, no artificial preservatives in any of the food we sell. We believe in real food. Whole Foods Market.
Those words can make it difficult for you to know what you're getting and to balance the claims of one product against the other, especially when it comes to trying to limit your family's exposure to potentially harmful chemicals. Nora McKendrick is a professor in the sociology department at Rutgers University in New Jersey. Her new book is Better Safe Than Sorry, How Consumers Navigate Exposure to Everyday Toxics. Nora, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks, Rob. It's great to be here.
Well, first of all, you talked to a lot of people about how they approach these issues and how they try to scout out what the most healthy or at least least harmful products are. One thing you came across is it seems confusing to a lot of people.
Yeah, that's right. I did talk to a lot of people. I've done this research now in Toronto, and I've done this research in New York City, talking to mothers who tend to be the ones who are making these decisions. They do most of the grocery shopping. They're making the grocery list, and they're the ones that are thinking most about the chemicals that are in their food and the food they feed their families. And many of them did find shopping their way out of chemical exposure to be pretty complicated. They were confused by labels. They didn't know whether they could trust certain claims. And they were on the internet, as you mentioned a moment ago, doing research, trying to find out, okay, what is a paraben? And should I avoid that in my baby skincare lotion or in my own lotion? Some of them talked about being overwhelmed and exhausted by the work that it took to avoid chemicals through shopping.
And you write that while some people have said, hey, we're too worried about what's in our food and our personal products, you say there's actually reason for people to be concerned. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, there's a stereotype out there that mothers who are reading these labels and are worried about the chemicals in their food and in their consumer products are overly anxious, or chemophobes is a word that comes up sometimes. But as it turns out, there's a lot of scientific evidence now that suggests that chronic exposure to chemicals in our food and our consumer products is cause for concern. A lot of it depends on when we're exposed. And early life exposure, so that means exposure in utero, so during fetal development, infancy, childhood, exposure to certain toxic compounds at this life stage can set the stage for things like cancer, neurological disorders, diabetes, obesity, and the list goes on. And mothers are increasingly aware of this. They're reading it in their pregnancy advice books, and some of them are even hearing about it from their doctors.
And you say there's a reasonable lack of trust from consumers based on histories of products like lead used in lead paints and other products.
Yeah. In the United States, there's a history of government regulators, so regulators at the federal level, prioritizing industry expansion and development at the expense of public health and the environment. So there's a history, not just with lead, but with other compounds as well, where evidence emerges that a compound is problematic, possibly toxic, and government drags its feet because industry typically pushes back and says, wait, we need to wait for this scientific evidence to pile up and show us that this compound is indeed toxic. Meanwhile, in other jurisdictions, like in the European Union, it's a different standard that's used. Industry has to prove that a compound is safe before it can be used. In the United States, it's different. The EPA and other regulators have to prove that a compound is harmful in order to institute restrictions, or they'll face backlash from industry.
Talking to Nora McKendrick, her new book is Better Safe Than Sorry, How Consumers Navigate Exposure to Everyday Toxics. And a heart of what goes into a lot of these decisions you may people make that you found, you call precautionary consumption. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, so I came up with that term because I realized that when people are standing at the in the grocery store and they're looking at the shelf and they're picking up a product and they're reading the ingredient label, many of them are making precautionary judgments. They're looking at those ingredients and saying, okay, this product is for sale at the grocery store. Somebody has allowed it to be here. It has presumably been vetted by someone, which in fact it probably hasn't, as I learned doing research for my book. But the consumer is standing there and saying, well, is it okay? You know, should I buy something with parabens or phthalates or artificial colors or artificial flavors? Or should I err on the side of caution and just avoid those things altogether? So I realized what consumers were doing was they were applying this kind of precautionary principle, but at the individual level when they were at the grocery store. And everybody has their own set of standards. For some people, it's fine to have artificial colors and artificial flavorings, but they don't want to be exposed to much plastic, so they're avoiding that. For other people, it has to be organic all around, from the meat and vegetables to everything.
And you write, and you mentioned earlier, a lot of this falls to mothers who are either pregnant or raising their infants, their kids, and there's a lot of you know, trying to protect health here, but a lot of guilt in some ways that goes into these decisions. Can you talk about the quandary a lot of moms are finding themselves in?
Yeah, there is a lot of guilt when it comes to feeding children. I've learned this from my research. I've learned this from my colleagues' research, like Jose Johnston at the University of Toronto writes about this, and Kate Cairns at Rutgers Camden writes about this. Feeding children and shopping for children is an activity that not very many mothers enjoy doing. It's filled with guilt. You know, am I feeding my child the right thing? Are they eating enough fruits and vegetables? Is their diet balanced? And then added to these very basic concerns now is the question of, well, should I be giving my child organic food exclusively? For many families, that's impossible. It's just too expensive, or it takes too much time, or they just don't have all organic options available to them, depending on where they live. So with that, with those trade-offs, with those choices, comes a lot of guilt. So I had mothers say things like, well, you know, I found some beautiful grapes that were on sale. You know, they were like $1.99 a pound, and they just looked wonderful. But I was wondering, could I feed these to my kid, knowing that they're conventional, that is not organic, so grown with pesticides and fungicides, et cetera? Or should I just not give my child grapes and wait to give him certified organic grapes that I can find at another store when they go on sale? So these small calculations that mothers are making every day. And sometimes mothers would say they did feel guilty giving their kids, you know, conventional strawberries or not spending the extra money on organic meat and organic dairy. And in fact, as I learned, it's very hard to do that. It's very expensive, and very few of us can really afford to do that on a regular basis.
Yeah, you write that there's a stereotype that most of the people and most of the moms weighing these issues are going to be middle class, upper class, mostly white moms. You found that that wasn't true.
Yeah, I found that wasn't true, and I realized that this is a stereotype that we have that probably goes back to when, you know, green shopping and eco shopping first became popular, sort of in the 80s and 90s. It was mainly white, middle class, upper class consumers that were spending the extra money on eco-friendly products. But now we're seeing a big expansion in interest, especially in organic foods, from Black consumers, Latino consumers. And in my research, I found that lower-income women were also thinking about this. And for those who could afford the time to buy, to compare prices across different supermarkets, they could actually buy some organic foods on a limited budget. Now, I didn't interview anyone who was really low income, so really kind of chronic poverty, really unable to make ends meet. But I did interview people who were on lower incomes and who had been on food stamps for a time period, and they were able to do it, but what they had to invest was time. They had to do their shopping at a discount store where they knew certain organic products were a really good bargain, and then go to another store where other products were a good bargain. And by doing that, they could actually buy a fair amount of organic for their families, but it was even more exhausting for them. And while they saved money, they did have to spend a lot of time doing it.
We're talking to Nora McKendrick, professor in the sociology department at Rutgers University in New Jersey. We're talking about her new book called Better Safe Than Sorry, How Consumers Navigate Exposure to Everyday Toxics. We want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Do you try to assess the safety of the products you're buying? How do you balance the claims of one product against another? Are you willing to pay more when you can for items that seem safer, or does budget have to take the highest priority for you? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We continue the conversation about chemicals in foods and how consumers can be better educated about what is and isn't in the products they buy and how people make these decisions. Nora McKendrick is a professor in the sociology department at Rutgers University in New Jersey. Her new book is called Better Safe Than Sorry, How Consumers Navigate Exposure to Everyday Toxics. I want to hear your story at 800-642-1234. Is this you? Do you weigh local commercial produce against long-distance traveling but organic produce? Do you read those labels? Do you understand them? I don't. Do you try to figure out what is right for you, for your kids, for your family? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll go to our callers now. Aaron is with us in Sturgeon Bay. Aaron, hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Yeah, I made the switch to organics a couple years ago. I stopped eating meat about 10 years ago. And learning about glyphosate, which is the horrible chemical in Roundup, they've even found it in mother's breast milk. It's so pervasive. I don't want to put any of it in my body. It's very, very bad for you. I found there's a local store here, Pick and Save. They have quite a good selection of really high-quality, low-cost, organic food.
Aaron, thanks a lot for the call. Nora, that's similar to a lot of the stories you heard from people. People worried about maybe a particular chemical and going as organic as they are able to in their area.
Yeah, consumers are learning a lot about what is in their food. And the case of glyphosate, which is a compound in Roundup, which is made by Monsanto, which is soon to be Bayer. They've been bought by Bayer. That was recently announced. And that's been making the news lately because different environmental groups who happen to be the ones who are really testing our foods to find out what pesticide residues are in there have revealed that glyphosate is in so many of the things that we buy. Now, the United States Environmental Protection Agency maintains that glyphosate is safe. It doesn't pose a harm to human health, but we're learning through the European Union and the World Health Organization that glyphosate may be a probable carcinogen, and now there are lawsuits ongoing in California that have asked Monsanto to open up their email archives, and it's revealing that a lot of the studies that Monsanto has used to maintain that glyphosate is safe were produced by scientists that were paid by Monsanto. And so lawyers and scientists and defendants are sorting through all of this information right now. We'll learn more about what's happening in California. But that is one of the concerns that I've heard about, or people just mention pesticide residues in general.
Aaron, thanks for that call. We'll go next to Lucy in Madison. Lucy, hi.
I just wanted to put it out there that Environmental Working Group is an organization, EWG, and basically one of the things that they do is rate products, skin products, by what kind of toxins are in the product. So they rate cosmetics and sunscreen and all sorts of lotions and shampoos and things. So if people want to know, if people are unsure of what to buy, that would be a good place to look, I think.
Lucy, thanks for the call. And Nora, you reference the Environmental Working Group, I think, quite a bit in your book.
Yeah, I do, because the Environmental Working Group, as this caller pointed out, does have all of these rating and ranking systems for, they have the Dirty Dozen list, which tells us which fruits and vegetables have the highest levels of pesticide residues. It has a skin deep database that allows you to go in and look up your skin lotion, your shampoo, and find out if there are probable carcinogens in there or endocrine disruptors. And it also ranks sunscreen every year. You know, June every year it comes out with a sunscreen list. And what I argue in the book is that groups like Environmental Working Group have really stepped in to fill the gap that regulators have left, because consumers no longer trust what they're buying, and for good reason. There are serious regulatory gaps where products haven't been adequately tested before they reach the market. In fact, many products are never tested, or the compounds that go into them are never tested before they go to market. So we have environmental groups like Environmental Working Group and others that test these products and tell us what to buy. And so all they have apps that you can use. You can go to their website. And so that's what I find consumers are turning to. They're turning to these groups to tell them what to do.
Thanks for that call, Lucy, at 800-642-1234. We're talking to Nora McKendrick. Her new book is Better Safe Than Sorry, How Consumers Navigate Exposure to Everyday Toxics. Back to your calls now. Bob is with us in Madison. Bob, hi.
Hey, Rob and Nora. I just wanted to make the comment that I know a little bit about vegetable production, and I do choose organic as a function of what chemicals are used in the conventional production. For example, potatoes, I always buy organic because the conventional production requires a lot of chemical input, whereas onions are actually relatively chemical-free or pesticide-free in conventional production, and I rarely buy organic onions.
Bob, thanks a lot. So kind of a triage there, Nora, and we hear that, you know, the Dirty Dozen vegetable list, people picking and choosing these vegetables or fruits might have more pesticides than these others, selecting organic accordingly.
That's right. EWG, and we were talking about them a moment ago, they have a list called the Clean 15. I can't remember if onions are on the Clean 15, but certainly fruits and vegetables that require very few chemical inputs are on that list. So that helps. Again, this is part of this toolkit that consumers can use to pick the safest or lowest chemical foods and foods overall. So it's true that some vegetables don't require a lot of chemical inputs, but again, we're looking to these environmental advocacy groups to tell us what to buy when, as I argue in the book, we really need our regulators like the Environmental Protection Agency, the FDA, the USDA, to do a better job of vetting our products before they reach the market.
And I wanted to get into that point, Nora. You know, we could all get a PhD in biochemistry and research, look at all these papers and lawsuits around the world. You're hoping to take some of the heat off of the individual consumers, the moms in particular. What kind of changes at federal agencies that you were just mentioning would you like to see to put everyone's mind a little more at ease?
Well, the changes I ask for in the book are big. And one reason they're so big is that it turns out, and I was surprised by this when I did research for the book, that our food and our consumer products have never been particularly well regulated in the United States. There's always been this tension, this power struggle between consumers, manufacturers, and government. And manufacturers or industries usually held most of the power in this relationship. And I was surprised to see that, you know, from the early 1900s through to now. When I started writing this book, it was at a time when there were major reforms happening to the Toxic Substances Control Act, which was an act that was put into place in 1976. It was flawed from the beginning. It's basically what allows so many things to hit the market without ever being, without the chemical compounds that make them up, ever being tested for their safety. And there were huge bipartisan efforts to try to reform this law to make it more precautionary. In other words, to evaluate things a bit more carefully before putting them on the market. And then as I was finishing up the book, of course, we had a change in administration. And now the Environmental Protection Agency is being led by Scott Pruitt, who's made a very bold change to the agency and, in fact, is rolling back even these modest improvements that were put into place in 2016. So I say that the changes that we need are big because they are big. They will require massive changes in how we think about the role of government in the marketplace. And I look to the European Union as just one example of how we could do that. But even states like California have mechanisms in place where they are looking at chemicals batch by batch and trying to determine, you know, which chemicals are safe and which chemicals should be taken off the market. And if we have states like California lead the way, then manufacturers will follow because that's a huge market for them. So there are some big changes and there are some smaller changes too. We're seeing retailers respond like Target and CVS saying that they won't carry products with certain compounds in them because of pressure they're getting from environmental groups, health groups, and consumers.
We'll leave it there for now. Nora, thanks a lot for joining us today. That was Nora McKendrick, professor in the sociology department at Rutgers University in New Jersey. We've been talking about her new book. It's called Better Safe Than Sorry, How Consumers Navigate Exposure to Everyday Toxics. You can keep the conversation going on over at the Ideas Network Facebook page. How do you choose consumer products, food products when you go shopping? Are you a label reader? Are there ingredients you avoid? Do you feel overwhelmed? What do you think of our guest's suggestion of more stringent regulation of the various chemicals that go into foods and other consumer products? Let us know what you think. You can join in on the conversation over at the Ideas Network Facebook page or tweet us at Central Time WPR.